Fantasy dudes, which is all of you, listen up. Did you know your chance of winning on draft 80% better than on the salary cap sites? No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded draft. Think about that. It's awesome. You're playing in a real live NBA or NFL draft right now. You can do it right now and be done under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. You just have to use the promo code FEAST. Again, you're playing a real money draft for free just by using our promo code FEAST. It gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it, they're even offering Feast listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. You can't lose. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with promo code FEAST.
It's time to eat.
Get in my belly!
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. It is the Fantasy Feast presented by BetOnline.ag, the online gaming website of choice for the Fantasy Feast podcast with the best odds and fast payouts. I'm Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, really into fantasy these days. Finally got back on the winning track on my season-long Feast team, which was nice. And I'm doing pretty well in a bunch of the MFL leagues, so that's pretty cool. He's Evan Silva. He's the guy, the reason why you're here. I get it. He's the Roto World superstar. I don't think there's anybody better in the world at fantasy football. He is going to give you all the information you need over the course of the rest of this podcast, as well as part two, which will be the Sunday afternoon game, Sunday night, Monday night. We will record both of them today. The second one will be in your podcast app after midnight, so you can listen to it on the way to work tomorrow morning. Without further ado, Evan, let's dive in. Let's start with the Thursday night game. You and I both on board that we like Thursday night football, by the way. And we're going to like this week because it's the Steelers and the Titans tomorrow night. Steelers offense is still – neither one of these teams do I feel like are really clicking on all cylinders from a fantasy perspective, Evan.
Yeah, I would agree. This is a really good game, though. I mean, Steelers are a good football team. They haven't really hit their ceiling as an offense yet, and I'm starting to become skeptical that they will. I mean, I think the best word to describe Ben Roethlisberger's play on the field right now would be frustrating. With that said, he has enough talent around him, enough playmakers around him. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster has been incredible, and at this point is an every week wide receiver 2/wide receiver 3. But Ben has been good. He has enough talent around him right now that talent has elevated him to the point where he's a solid fantasy play on Thursday night against the Titans, who are a pass funnel defense. They play solid run defense, and they're very bad against the pass. I mean, Andy Dalton had a good game against them. Over the course of the year, they've really struggled to rush the passer. Third from the bottom in the league in sacks. I think Ben Roethlisberger is a solid, not outstanding play in this game. Le'Veon Bell, as I mentioned, the Titans have been very stout against the run, but they've been getting smashed by running backs in the passing game. They've allowed the third most receiving yards to opposing RBs. And I like that for Le'Veon. I mean, Le'Veon's a guy who's averaging almost 30 touches per game. I expected more from him against the Colts, but that's just being greedy. I mean, dude had, 120 yards from scrimmage. And so I expect him to have a better game against the Titans, despite this being a difficult matchup. One of my theories for Thursday Night Football has been that because there is less preparation time, one thing that we can count on will be the quarterbacks to more so trust the guys that they usually trust. And, I mean, I've talked to quarterbacks about this. Trust is such a huge factor at the quarterback position and when they are, doling out targets. So I think that this is a huge bounce-back spot for Antonio Brown against this Titans defense that couldn't do a whole lot against A.J. Green. I mean, he had that 70-yard touchdown. He didn't really do a whole lot other than that. But I just don't think that they can hang with big-time number one receivers. Antonio A.J. Green burnt up Logan Ryan, and I think that we'll see Logan Ryan on Antonio Brown in this game. On the other side, the Steelers' team strength quietly has been their defense this year. I know that they don't get nearly as much credit as the offense does, but that's really unfair to the defense. I mean, the Steelers are second in the NFL in sacks. They had problems in run defense earlier this year, have fixed them over the last three games. It's not an easy matchup on any level for the Titans offense, and I think it's a concerning matchup. Marcus Mariota has underwhelmed, only two top 12 finishes on the year in fantasy. I think that, you know, if I was going to decide between Marcus Mariota and Ben Roethlisberger in this game, I would go with Ben Roethlisberger. I do think it was promising that Marcus Mariota started to run again last week, six rushes for 51 yards. He'd gone about a month or like 4 or 5 weeks without really doing anything on the ground. So I thought that that was promising. But again, I would go with Ben over Mariota straight up here. Corey Davis usage, season high in snaps last week, 10 targets led the team, and he leads the Titans in targets since their bye week. I think that he can have a good game right here against the Steelers defense that, although they've been very good all year in pass defense, they've started to show some cracks in that Detroit game. On, I think it was it Sunday Night Football? I think it was Sunday Night Football. T.J. Jones, Marvin Jones, and Golden Tate all had big games against the Steelers. We just saw the Steelers lose Joe Hayden. And then last week, Dante Moncrief had a 60-yard touchdown against him. Chester Rogers came out of nowhere, 6 for 104 and a touchdown. We will see Cody Sensabaugh playing in place of Joe Hayden. That's a huge, huge downgrade. And so I like Corey Davis and Rishard Matthews. Delanie Walker would be the player in the Titans receiver pass catcher core that I would be a little concerned about. The Steelers have given up the third fewest yards in the NFL to tight ends. Last week they shut down Jack Doyle, who had been white hot before that game, held him to two catches for 9 yards. They shut down Travis Kelce earlier in the year. So this is, I mean, they've played actually good tight ends and shut them down. That is concerning for Delanie Walker. I might look into some streamers in the Sunday games to play over him. In the backfield, DeMarco Murray, he didn't play very well last week, but he was awesome in fantasy because he scored three short touchdowns. And I actually begrudgingly started him in a few leagues and was able to reap the benefits of that. You know, it wasn't because that was a smart start. We got lucky. And I don't think we're going to get as lucky this week. He still is getting enough work to be considered an every week RB2 in season long leagues, but not as optimistic about him having a big game. And then Derrick Henry is just a touchdown or bust guy at this point. Saw three targets last week, dropped two of them. That's not going to help in his bid for more playing time, and we can move on to the next one.
Love it. Let's go to Tampa Bay and Miami. I think, is it supposed to be Fitzpatrick again this week?
Yes, sir.
Fitzpatrick again against the Dolphins, who, as I tweeted earlier this week, I'm still hoping the NFL hires Ted Wells for an investigation into how they won four football games this year.
Oh, man, they are so bad. My good, I mean, they don't do anything well, literally don't do anything well, don't run the ball well, don't throw the ball well, can't stop the run, and can't stop the pass. So, I mean, that's as bad as it gets. I mean, at least the Browns, they have a good run defense. At least they have that. They've shown some flashes in the running game lately as well. The Dolphins don't do anything well, and that is going to be an issue going forward. So last week, you know, all season, the Buccaneers have played bad defense. You know, a lot of that is due to injuries. They have a lot of good players on defense, but they were missing a lot of them. And then all of a sudden, all of a sudden, all these guys get healthy, and they come out and they just dominated the Jets offense, which had been playing well to that point. So, you know, I feel like I should have done a better job of seeing that coming. Either way, you know, this same scenario played out for the Bucs at this time last year. They were bad defensively for the first half of the season. In the second half, they were awesome in defense, allowed like 17 points per game in the final 8 weeks last season. That was one of the reasons that I thought that they could be a better team this year, you know, because they could carry over their defensive success. That obviously did not happen in large part due to injuries. But now with most of those guys back healthy, I don't think this is a good matchup for Jay Cutler. Kenyon Drake and Damian Williams have been splitting the load. They're at 12 touches per game since the Jay Ajayi trade. Kenyon Drake has been much, much better than Damian Williams in terms of efficiency, but the coaching staff trusts Damian Williams more. So, I mean, I don't foresee like any reason for movement, you know, in this backfield in terms of distribution. And I think that 12 touches is a reasonable expectation for both of these guys, and that makes them flex plays with a lean toward Kenyon Drake because of his superior big play ability. Now, one thing that I'm having a problem, separating here, and why I would start Jay Cutler in a two quarterback league is because I like his receivers in this game. And usually, like last week, for instance, I made the mistake of not liking Case Keenum, even though I liked the spots for all of his pass catchers. So that's something that is sometimes difficult to juggle. But I think that DeVante Parker, who has shown better health, particularly last week, I think that he is in a great, great spot against the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers have also been smashed by slot receivers. Larry Fitzgerald went nuts against them, for instance. Who else? I had a list of guys here. Kendall Wright had 7 catches against them. Adam Thielen had 98 yards against them. Danny Amendola, 8 for 77. So I like Jarvis Landry's matchup here. Now, Julius Thomas, I think that Week 9 game against the Raiders, very likely a fluke. He's gone over 30 yards in 2 of 9 games this year. So I'm not jumping back on Julius Thomas. He did score a touchdown on a shovel pass. I'm not even sure that on replay it should have been a touchdown, but whatever. That takes care of the Dolphins. So I put too much trust in Ryan Fitzpatrick last week, and I mean, I like the over in that game, and you know, that all that stuff backfired. None of that stuff happened. The Bucs for some reason reduced Cameron Brate's playing time. He didn't do anything. You know, Adam Humphries didn't do anything. You know, it's just you're asking. You know, you get what you ask for when you put chips in the basket of Ryan Fitzpatrick. And you know, even against this terrible Dolphins defense, I'm shying away from that. Mike Evans is back, and that does give us some more optimism regarding Ryan Fitzpatrick as like a desperation streamer or a two quarterback league play. I think that will obviously help the offense. It lowers the expectations for Cameron Brate specifically. The thing about Cameron Brate, though, is that he's very tempting because his matchup is like red hot. I mean, the Dolphins have given up. The Dolphins haven't even played Rob Gronkowski yet this year, which they will do twice. And yet they've given up the second most catches to tight ends. They woke up Ed Dixon after his catchless Week 9 game. Last week got shelled by Jared Cook, 8 for 126 in their previous game. DeSean Jackson, you know, same deal as usual. He has cleared 70 yards and or scored a touchdown in 5 of his last 8 games. And he was the leading receiver last week, you know, establishing some rapport with Ryan Fitzpatrick without Mike Evans. But I think that the story is always the same. He's a volatile player for the most part. He has been fairly consistent this year, and I think his outlook is enhanced by this being such a good matchup. Doug Martin has been super, super unproductive. I mean, and they went through this last year, you know, and he actually wound up getting benched, which it's starting to worry me how badly Doug Martin has struggled. I mean, just from watching him, like, he will look good on the field, but his productivity is poor, which, you know, it doesn't necessarily make sense, but he, like, his 3-yard runs look better than most running backs' 3-yard runs, but they're still 3-yard runs. And those are some of the best runs that he's been having lately. So I'm just starting to get worried that they might start to pull some work off of his plate. With that said, again, great, great matchup. The Dolphins, 3 games in a row, have given up the season best game to Alex Collins, Marshawn Lynch, Jonathan Stewart. Doug Martin did have 20 touches last week. Dolphins over their last 5 games giving up 5.2 yards per carry to opposing running backs. That is one of the worst marks in the league. And we can move on to the next one.
All right, Evan, let's get to Sunday. Another Sunday 1 o'clock game. Bri will be there. It's Detroit against Chicago. I don't even know what there is to say Chicago from a fantasy standpoint, but Detroit feels like Matthew Stafford and those guys are heating up a little bit, and they ran the ball well on Sunday.
I don't think that Matthew Stafford is going to play well here at Soldier Field. I'm definitely concerned about the weather. The Bears have held 7 of their 9 quarterbacks face to fantasy results of quarterback 16 or worse. This is a bad spot for any quarterback to go into, and we've seen them play some good quarterbacks, and they have not produced against the Bears, particularly at Soldier Field. The Bears are 7th in the NFL in sacks. They've given up the 4th fewest touchdown passes in the league. So I'm not optimistic about Matthew Stafford keeping up his hot streak. One note about the Lions and Pro Football Focus's Pat Thorman has talked about this extensively. The Lions play a lot faster, a lot more no huddle when they are at home as opposed to on the road where they play very, very slow. And so that will lead to fewer offensive plays and therefore fewer opportunities to heat up the box score for their players on offense. And if you go back and look how Vic Fangio defended Matthew Stafford last year, Matthew Stafford had 223 yards and 1 touchdown and 213 yards and 0 touchdowns against the Bears last year. And that was against a much worse Bears defense than we're getting this season. So significantly lowered expectations for Matthew Stafford. Amir Abdullah fumbled twice in week 9 against the Packers. And then last week he had his second fewest touches of the season, only 12. And he was held to 60 yards or fewer from scrimmage for the 5th straight game. So he is not a fantasy starter. He's on that flex borderline. I don't like to play Amir Abdullah. If he doesn't score a touchdown, then he's really going to hurt you. And, you know, those are not really the plays that you want to play unless you're really desperate. Theo Riddick hasn't handled double-digit touches in a game since week 2. In the pass catcher core, Golden Tate is red hot right now. 4 straight games with 6-plus catches and 85-plus yards. I think that his matchup is difficult, though, against the Bears. The Bears have played very good in slot coverage. Adam Thielen, they shut down. They held Mohamed Sanu below 50 yards. Juju Smith-Schuster below 40 yards. Randall Cobb last week at 52 scoreless yards. So I think that Golden Tate is an every-week starter in season-long leagues. I'm not really looking at him in DFS. Marvin Jones was a huge dud with Kenny Golladay back last week. And one thing I need to look into a little bit more, and I will do this more ahead of that Thanksgiving Thursday game against the Vikings. But I need to look into whether it has really affected Marvin Jones when Kenny Golladay has been on the field. And I know that it has a little bit so far, but the sample has been so small. I want to get another game under our belts, and I will have more information on that when we talk about that Thursday, that Thanksgiving Thursday game. And then Ebron, he hasn't cleared 60 yards all season. He's averaging 2.2 catches per game. The Bears allow the fifth fewest fantasy points to tight ends. Not really an option. So Mitchell Trubisky had a lot more dropbacks and a lot more yards, 297 yards. His box score looks pretty good on paper. You watch the game, it wasn't really as impressive. And you know that the reason that he had so many attempts is because the Bears were trailing in the game. That's not the way that they want to play. So Jordan Howard was one of the highest owned running backs in daily fantasy last week and just crushed the field. I mean, he burned everyone. He may have been the highest owned running back on all the DFS sites last week, relatively. And he was just bad. I mean, 15 carries for 54 yards with nothing in the passing game. That's 5.4 points, and that will kill you. So now we have him after burning the field in a very similar spot to last week. The Bears are not favorites in this game, but I don't think that the Lions are significantly better than the Packers right now. I mean, I think that they're a little bit better, but not like, you know, by leaps and bounds. So I think it's a great week to buy back Jordan Howard in daily fantasy. And then we saw the Lions. So they've been very, very up and down in run defense all year. We saw them last week get crushed by the Browns running backs. 26 carries for 144 yards, 5.5 yards per carry and a touchdown between Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson. I think that Jordan Howard is an awesome play in daily fantasy this week to bring it back. You know, Jordan Howard can bust long runs. He's going to be the focal point of the Bears offense. And because Trubisky had all these elevated attempts, elevated passing yards, so the box score looks better for guys like Dontrell Inman and, you know, Josh Bellamy caught a long touchdown and Kendall Wright, you know, he did some things. I really wouldn't go trying to chase, you know, any of that production. Dontrell Inman, I think, is worth owning in 14 and 16 team PPR leagues. But, you know, these guys are really, really fringe plays. I mean, this is not something, not a situation that I think they're going to be able to build on, because that's not their offensive identity. And we can move on to the next one.
Love it. Let's keep it rolling and get to Jacksonville and Cleveland. Cleveland moved the ball. Maybe they're one of their best offensive performances of the year against Detroit. Unfortunately, they just didn't play very well on defense. Hugh Jackson said it was Kaiser's best game. What do you think about the Browns?
Yeah, unfortunately now they got to face the Jaguars, and they're probably going to get smashed. There's going to be weather concerns in this game. I mean, there's major win in the forecast. It's just going to be a very difficult game to rely on from a passing game standpoint. I think it's supposed to snow in Cleveland. All that really matters is the wind, but the wind looks like, you know, in the early forecast, it's going to be a significant concern. So, you know, don't want anything to do with DeShone Kizer except for using, you know, the Browns defense against, or this, I'm sorry, the Jaguars defense against him. Just no interest in pretty much any Brown, maybe some Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson has finally started to get involved on a consistent basis. He had a season high 10 carries last week. And he's had double-digit touches now in four straight games. So Duke Johnson in PPR, I don't want anything to do with. I don't care that Kenny Britt scored a touchdown last week. You know, Corey Coleman is playing this week. You can't use him against the Jaguars. I do think he's worth grabbing in season-long leagues to see what happens, see how that plays out. But this Browns, you know, this is not a good situation for the Browns. It's really not a good situation for either team. And I mean, I don't want to predict a Browns win here, but it wouldn't totally shock me if this was like a game that, you know, went 13-10 and, you know, just one bounce of the ball just determines the winner here. You know, it's I think it's going to be that kind of a game. The Browns defense just matches up really well with the Jaguars offense, which, you know, it's predicated on the run. And the Browns have, they're number two in run defense DVOA. You know, they hold run, they hold opposing running backs to 2.9 yards per carry. So, I mean, you're starting Leonard Fournette, you know, every single week. His usage was a little bit down in his first game back last week. He usually averages 59% of the snaps and 24 touches. But last week he was 19 touches, 54% of the snaps. I think they may have just done that as a precautionary measure. You know, he's a volume-based start. He does not have a good matchup. And then, look, if the weather clears up and Blake Bortles has, you know, I mean, you need everything to be perfect for Blake Bortles. You do not want to – he already has enough accuracy problems. You don't want to, you know, add any accuracy problems to his plate with wind of any kind. It has to be ideal temperature. It has to be ideal conditions. But if we get that, which doesn't look likely right now, then I think that Blake Bortles is in the mix as a quarterback streamer this week. And then Marquise Lee, you know, you really want to see good weather for Marquise Lee because of the nature of his quarterback. So Day-Day Westbrook is expected to make his debut this week. Some beat writers in Jacksonville think that he will not be very involved. I do think that he is worth rostering. He has serious big play ability. We talked about him last week. They did not activate him again, but they are expected to activate him this week, especially after they lost Allen Hurns. And I think Day-Day Westbrook would play in the slot, although he only played in the slot 6% of the time in the preseason. And it might actually be Marquise Lee in the slot. Marquise Lee so far this season has played 13% of his snaps in the slot. The other dude, your boy Keelan Cole, I'm going to start him in a deep league this week. He's actually gone over 60 yards in two of his last three games. And with Allen Hurns out, his outlook should be elevated. Mercedes Lewis would be an entirely matchup-driven streamer. We know the Browns get crushed by tight ends week in and week out. We also know that Mercedes Lewis doesn't get very many targets. So that's where we are with this game, and we can move on to the next one.
Okay, let's get to Baltimore and Green Bay. That's where I will be, Evan. It's awesome. The Ravens, it's the Packers. And for the first time, Hundley actually threw the ball downfield, made some nice plays. He got Devontae Adams involved. It seems like that's the best matchup there for the Packers. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I think that that's what you want to see from a young quarterback like that. You want to see like him taking steps forward because he really looked lost in his first couple of games. But we saw him take a step forward last week. He played just carried himself in a different manner, I thought, in that game and made two big throws to Devontae Adams. They really went after Kyle Fuller, the Bears' left cornerback, and had a lot of success against him. I don't think he's going to build on it. You know, I mean, maybe he'll prove me wrong. One concern is that he tweaked his hamstring late in the game. And, you know, we do not want him to lose any of his rushing value. He didn't help us last week from a rushing standpoint. He finished with 16 yards. He had a 17-yard scramble, and you could see him pull up on that scramble. And he just, you know, he's got like a significant concern right now with his rushing value. And then, I mean, no one has thrown the ball successfully except for Blake Bortles in London. But no one has thrown the ball successfully against the Ravens defense so far this year. One of nine quarterbacks to face the Ravens have even finished in the top 16 on the week. That, of course, was Blake Bortles. But, man, I had Brett Hundley going a couple games ago against the Lions, and he was a top 12 fantasy quarterback. And then I dropped him for Eli Manning. Eli Manning was the quarterback 11 last week. You know, I'm starting Eli Manning over Brett Hundley again this week. Eli Manning faces that Chiefs defense that is just a sieve at this point. The running back situation, it looks like it's going to be Jamal Williams. Jamal Williams, kind of a plotter, but, you know, volume matters most in fantasy. And, I mean, even plotters, you know, you get the right block, you get sprung into the open field, you can break a big play, you know. So, the issue here is that the Ravens have really – they tightened up their run defense, which had been a major problem there for a while. But they got their defensive front healthy. They tightened up their run defense over their two games leading into the bye week, held opposing running back to 2.5 yards per carry in those two games. And so it's not a very good matchup. I don't think the Packers are going to score very many points here. But Jamal Williams, you know, he's a guy that on waivers this week I'm trying to claim, and certainly in leagues where I need a running back. I mean, we have Aaron Jones out 3 to 6 weeks, and we have Ty Montgomery with this rib injury that, you know, has bothered him since week 5. We're in week 11 now. So, and then the super sleeper would be Devontae Mays. You know, if you're in like, he was a great athlete coming out of, I think it was Southern Utah, 7th round pick. Not a guy that I had even really heard of entering the draft other than just having looked at him from an athletic standpoint. But hey, he's a big back, about 230 pounds and a great athlete. And sometimes that's enough. You know, you combine that with some opportunity. I think in deep leagues, he is absolutely worth an add, and certainly in dynasty leagues. You mentioned how Davante Adams, he's dominated targets with Brett Hundley at quarterback. That is something you can sort of hang your hat on. I still think he's going to be volatile. He has been volatile from a weekly production standpoint with Brett Hundley at quarterback. So if he has a bad game against a really good Ravens pass defense, you know, you really can't be surprised. Jordy Nelson's value was so tied to his on-field rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And I own him in a bunch of leagues, and I haven't even been starting him. It's that bad. And I don't plan to start him against the Ravens. Pretty much same deal with Randall Cobb. I mean, in through three games of Brett Hundley at quarterback, he's seen 4, 5, and 4 targets. That's just not going to get it done. On the other side, Joe Flacco, he's been a top 16 fantasy quarterback in just one start out of 9 this year, and he hasn't passed for 270 yards all year. You know, it just doesn't matter who he's playing. He could be playing the Browns, and, you know, he's not worth using in fantasy football. So now the backfield, you know, this could become a major quagmire from a fantasy standpoint, because we had sort of solidified roles with Alex Collins as the interior two-down grinder, was playing real well in that role, and then Buck Allen as the passing down back, and he had been vulturing goal line carries as well. And now it looks like we're going to get Danny Woodhead and Terrence West back from their injuries. Terrence West, of course, is directly behind Alex Collins. Danny Woodhead is, technically ahead of Buck Allen. You know, I don't think people understand these guys, like, essentially play different positions. Terrence West and Alex Collins play the same position. Danny Woodhead and Buck Allen play the same position. But now you have all four of those guys in the mix. You know, this is a week where I just kind of want to wait and see. I mean, I own Alex Collins, I own Buck Allen, I own Danny Woodhead. And I'm not trying to start any of them in this game, because I don't want to have to deal with that kind of thing. And certainly for Danny Woodhead, like, dude has been out since week 1. You know, you think he's just, I mean, the odds are against him jumping back in, taking on a monster role right away. Even, you know, he's at risk of like an in-game setback. So I want to see him like make it through a full game before I use him in fantasy. I do like this matchup for Jeremy Maclin, who has gotten over his early season shoulder injury. I think he's a solid play. The Packers slot corner, Jeremy Maclin's running 61% of his routes in the slot. Packers slot corner, Demaryius Randall, he is number 111 among 116 in Pro Football Focus's cornerback grades. The Packers have given up the 8th most fantasy points to wide receivers. So I don't think it's terribly unlikely that Mike Wallace could pop up for one of his big games. But I think that you also should know what you're getting into with Mike Wallace. I mean, he's gone over 30 yards in 2 of 8 games this year. So he's a dart, and he needs a big play to hit or a touchdown, or, I mean, he needs to make a big play. And I don't think that Ben Watson is a good option against the Packers. The Packers have allowed the fewest fantasy points in the league, and we can move on to the next one.
Okay, no more games that Brian and I will be at, but there is Arizona-Houston, and I saw you retweet this morning. It looks like Blaine Gabbert versus Tom Savage, like we all knew and were hoping for.
So I have waited on breaking down this game. You know, I just don't have a lot for it because there's so much uncertainty. But I do think that Blaine Gabbert can be good for Larry Fitzgerald. Drew Stanton did a fine job getting Larry Fitzgerald the rock. But I think that Blaine Gabbert can do just as well, if not better, from a sustainable standpoint. I thought that the luck was going to kind of run out for Drew Stanton. Even in that last game where Larry Fitzgerald wound up with great numbers, he didn't really do anything until garbage time. But I think that Blaine Gabbert will be feeding him from the get-go. You know, Blaine Gabbert, you go back and look at the receivers that he's had success throwing the ball to, it's been mostly interior slot guys. Last year it was Jeremy Curley. Jeremy Curley wound up leading the 49ers in receiving last year, and he was Blaine Gabbert's go-to guy. And then you go back and look at, like, Cecil Shorts. Cecil Shorts in Jacksonville was always Blaine Gabbert's favorite dude. And those guys play on the interior. Curley was strictly a slot receiver. Cecil Shorts was a little bit more outside, but he was an in-breaking route sort of receiver and a run-after-catch guy. And Larry Fitzgerald is, you know, an interior receiver who can absolutely hurt you after the catch. So, I don't have the area on the field where Blaine Gabbert likes to throw the ball is in the middle of the field, down the seams. I actually think that Jermaine Gresham wouldn't be a terrible, like, desperation streamer. I'm actually starting him in one league this week. It's a deep league now, but that's where Blaine Gabbert likes to throw the ball. That's where he's comfortable throwing the ball. I don't have a whole lot of optimism about John Brown, Jerron Brown, J.J. Nelson. Those guys are in a timeshare anyway. You know the deal with Adrian Peterson. I mean, he's going to get the ball. And that's just, you know, he's going to get the ball a lot. So, and it's going to be up to the run blocking, and it's going to be up to the defense, and it's going to be up to the flow of the game. And he's an RB2 in fantasy. He's a volume-driven RB2 in fantasy. On the other side, Tom Savage is a disaster. Pick up, you know, plug-and-play Cardinals defense. In every game, this is from Graham Barfield of he does still work for us, RotoWorld. At RotoWorld, he does a little bit of stuff for us, but he's now of Fantasy Guru Elite, John Hansen's, our buddy John Hansen's website. And he does a fantastic job. He noted that in every game where Tom Savage has played at least a half, the opposing defense has finished as a top 12 defense on the week. And that's, I think, five or six game sample. So pretty decent sample there. Love the Cardinals defense. I like Adrian Peterson even in daily fantasy. No one's going to want to play him. You want to play him on sites where it doesn't hurt you as much if you're using a running back who doesn't catch passes. On the other on the Texans side, I'm worried about Lamar Miller. You know, he's losing a ton of work to Dante Foreman, and the Cardinals are great against the run. DeAndre Hopkins is going to match up with Patrick Peterson. Will Fuller is out indefinitely. So the mega sleeper here, and hey, we were on Garrett Celek last week as the mega sleeper, and I mean that dude, like, he was a week winner. He saved my butt in daily fantasy. We used him in our high stakes league at tight end, which is a tight end premium league, and he had like 20 points in that league. It was glorious. So the mega sleeper this week is Bruce Ellington. This dude can fly. He is a former basketball player at South Carolina, exceptional athlete. Really liked him as a sleeper last year in San Francisco, but he got hurt. He tore his hamstring before the season. He was going to play the slot in Chip Kelly's offense, which has always been hyper productive. And then, of course, they traded for Jeremy Curley before the season. He went on to play that same position and lead the team in receiving. So big missed opportunity. But Bruce Ellington so far has been healthy, knock on wood, for the Texans. And with DeAndre Hopkins facing off with Patrick Peterson, Bruce Ellington, I think, is going to eat in this game. He's super cheap in daily fantasy. I think that he is going to I think he's going to have a big game. He's got serious big play ability, and Tom Savage likes him. And we can move on to the next one.
Okay. It is the L.A. Rams and the Minnesota Vikings, two very good football teams. As we're recording this, we still don't know who will be the quarterback for the Vikings, although we assume it will be Case Keenum. At least I do. What do you got on this game?
So as I was really, you know, going in depth into this game, I kind of noticed that these were are two of the most improved offenses in the league. But as I, you know, kind of just broke the game down on paper, it really sets up as a defensive battle. You know, both of these defenses are really good. The Rams actually began the season not playing particularly good defense, but that has changed. They've gotten better over the course of the year. I'm concerned about Jared Goff here because he's been very, very matchup sensitive. I mean, you look at all his big games, they've occurred against terrible defenses like the Texans, Giants, 49ers, Colts. And then when he's played good defenses, he's been terrible in fantasy. That's how, you know, most quarterbacks are, but he, to a stronger degree than most, has been very, very matchup sensitive. And in home games, the Vikings have held each of their last six opponents to 19 points or fewer. So I think that this is going to be a low-scoring game. You know, I wouldn't get cute necessarily, like trying to stream Ryan Fitzpatrick over Jared Goff, but I think like Eli Manning against Jared Goff is a legitimate debate, and we will talk about that a little bit more when we get to the Giants against the Chiefs. Todd Gurley does not have a good matchup either. I mean, the Vikings have allowed second fewest fantasy points to running backs, holding them to 3.47 yards per carry. They've allowed the fewest touchdowns in the league to opposing running backs. The thing that you're hanging your hat on with Todd Gurley is the volume. He has gone over 100 yards from scrimmage in seven of his last eight games, and he's averaging 23 touches per game during that stretch. And that touch count is brought down by a bunch of blowout wins where he was actually pulled early. You know, there was a game where like Malcolm Brown had 15 carries. And I need to mention Malcolm Brown because we talked about him as a stash the other week, and he sprained his MCL and now he's out indefinitely. Apparently it happened like on one of those final few carries against the Giants. That stinks. He's not a stash anymore. You don't stash injured backup running backs. So we press forward. I think that Devontae Mays right now is an intriguing, deeper stash. I don't know. If I think of any other ones, I will mention them. The pass catcher core, you know, it's going to be difficult, man. I mean, you know, I've been on Robert Woods, but you look at all the great receivers that have gone against the Vikings. No one's done anything. You know, Mike Evans, 67 scoreless yards. Antonio Brown, 62 scoreless yards. Jordy Nelson, when Aaron Rodgers was still playing, 60 scoreless yards. Devontae Adams did have a touchdown, 54 yards. Michael Thomas, 45 scoreless yards. Marvin Jones, 42 scoreless yards. So I don't. You can't really get excited about Robert Woods or Sammy Watkins in this game. I think that Cooper Kupp would be the one Rams receiver to have some optimism against the Vikings. Terrence Newman is the Vikings slot runner, and he's been so good for so many years, so underappreciated and overlooked. And I mean, dude is like 40 years old. I mean, he's older than both of us. He's still out there balling, but he is the place to attack in the Vikings secondary. Jamison Crowder last week at 4-for-76 against him. Adam Humphries 6-for-68. Eli Rogers and Juju Smith-Schuster at 7-for-59 and a touchdown. If we're looking for small leaks, and I mean, I'm not saying that Terrence Newman is even bad at all. Like, he's actually still good. But that would be the area where the Vikings would, like, be a little bit puncturable. You know, that would be their one spot where maybe you could get after him a little bit. And Cooper Kupp is fourth in the NFL in red zone targets right now. Tyler Higbee, Gerald Everett, you know, just can't use either of them when they're playing in a rotation. The story's kind of the same on the other side for the Vikings offense. The Rams have held 7 of their 9 quarterbacks faced below top 12 finishes in terms of fantasy weekly scoring. You know, I'm not trying to chase Case Keenum from last week. I'm also worried that at some point they're going to pull him, you know, if he throws a couple more interceptions. I mean, he's been excellent, you know, all things considered, but I'm not sure that I trust his in-game job security right now, you know, with Teddy Bridgewater looming. So that is a concern for me. The Rams still a little bit, you can still get after them a little bit on the ground. They're better than they were early in the season. But I mean, Lamar Miller was very efficient with his rushes last week against them. The problem is that Latavius Murray has, since he's gotten healthy, he started to take a stronger backfield share. Last week, he was a season high 49% of the snaps. He doesn't play at all in the passing game, so he's basically like Jonathan Stewart. You know, you have to get a touchdown from him or else he's going to hurt you. You know, he only has one game above 70 total yards all season, so he's never a comfortable fantasy play, but it's hurting Jerick McKinnon. Jerick McKinnon last week against the Redskins, 5-game low in touches, 5-game low in playing time. He still did have 12 touches, 51% of the snaps, so he played more than Latavius Murray. But, you know, if they're going to force Latavius Murray in here, then it's going to hurt Jerick McKinnon. And, I mean, you know, it's not ideal. I'm still starting Jerick McKinnon where I own him, especially in PPR leagues this week, but you know, if this becomes a multiple week trend, that's really, really going to hurt. With no good matchups really in the pass catcher core for the Vikings. If I would say the Rams have been awesome in slot coverage this year. What you're betting on with Adam Thielen is just how good he is individually, and that he can win in tough matchups. He's the only player in the NFL with 5 or more catches in all 9 games this season. Stephon Diggs, you hope that Trumaine Johnson shadows him. Pro Football Focus has charged Trumaine Johnson with the 7th most yards allowed among all NFL cornerbacks this year. And Stephon Diggs, when he's healthy, he can win against anyone. So I'm still playing him. But, you know, you also can't be surprised if one of these guys has a slow game because the matchups are not that good. Rams defense allowing the 4th fewest yards to opposing tight ends. So Kyle Rudolph in a tough spot. I think that he's going to be a touchdown or bust play this week, and we can move on to the next one.
Another pretty good game here. It is the Vikings. I'm sorry, we did the Vikings-Rams. I'm moving on to the next one. It's the Redskins, I meant to say. And the Saints. How about the Saints running game? I mean, I think they have the best O-line in the NFL, Evan. I really do.
Yeah, man. I mean, hey, we talked about that, you know, all offseason. I mean, they have the best running game in the NFL. They have the best offensive line in the NFL. They have depth on the offensive line. They are, like, they'll lose a guy and they'll have another good guy that they can plug in. You know, that's how the Cowboys were like 2 years ago, and that's now how the Saints are. So the Redskins have been good in run defense this year. It just doesn't really matter. I mean, I fully expect the Saints, especially at home, to be able to impose their will with the running game against the Redskins, especially after the Redskins. So they lost Mason Foster, who had been an every down inside linebacker for them early in the year, torn labrum in his shoulder. And his replacement had been Will Compton, holding down the fort, a guy who's made a lot of starts for them He last week suffered a Lisfranc sprain, and he is now out for the year. So those are concerning for the Redskins' run defense and positives for the Saints' running offense. The question is whether Drew Brees can finally have a good game. Because, I mean, not that he's been having bad games. He hasn't. He's been fine. You know, he's a top 10 fantasy quarterback on the season. But I think the people that drafted him, you know, in the 6th, 7th, 8th round, whatever, I mean, some people probably took him even earlier than that, you know. They probably expected a lot more from him, and they have not gotten that. Now we look at, you know, how the Redskins have fared recently in pass defense, and, you know, they started off the season playing pretty well. Not anymore. They're not rushing the passer as well anymore. And Case Keenum just lit him up for 304 yards and 4 touchdowns at home last week. Now on the season, 6 of 9 quarterbacks to have faced the Redskins posted top 13 fantasy results. You know, I'm in a couple leagues where I do own Drew Brees. I need a spike from him this week, not feeling too great about some of my other matchups, and I need that. So hopefully we get it. You know, I like his chances better at the Superdome than they would be in an away game. On to the receiver core. So Michael Thomas runs 50% of his routes against right cornerbacks. And so Josh Norman plays left cornerback all the time. Josh Norman has not shadowed a number one receiver in a single game this year. So Michael Thomas, I mean, actually over half the time, because he also plays a lot of snaps in the slot, he's going to be away from Josh Norman's side about 70% of the time. So, you know, if you hear other people like saying that, oh, Josh Norman, he's going to get shadowed by Michael, Josh Norman's going to shadow Michael Thomas this week. You know, you can just know that those people that say that, they don't know what they're talking about. And I hear this every week that Josh Norman is going to shadow some guy. He hasn't shadowed in a single game all year. So just getting that out there, it's just kind of frustrating how people, you know, talk about this stuff. They just don't know what they're talking about. Michael Thomas is 4th in the NFL in catches among wide receivers, 8th in receiving yards among wide receivers. And he's an every week fantasy starter. I know he hasn't had any blow up games, nor is Drew Brees. But you plug and play him every single week. Ted Ginn is actually going to get more routes on Josh Norman's side of the field. But it just doesn't really matter. He's going to get about 60% of his routes away from Josh Norman's side of the field. So the story is always the same with Ted Ginn. You need him to make a big play. You need him to score a touchdown. He's capable of that. Certainly at the Superdome, he's capable of that, although he's had big games on the road as well this year. He's just a volatile, low-volume fantasy player. And, you know, that's the hand that we're dealt. And if he has a good game and you start him, awesome. If he doesn't, you can't be surprised. The Redskins have given up the second most yards in the league to tight ends. Unfortunately, Kobe Fleener does not play for the Saints any longer. Willie Snead did play 47% of the Saints' offensive snaps last week. That was a season high. He saw 0 targets, and Willie Snead has not seen a target since week 6. So he's very much in prove-it mode. You know, he's not a usable fantasy player right now. Kirk Cousins has been a top 12 fantasy quarterback in 5 of his last 7. I know that the Saints' strength right now is their pass defense. But you like the shootout nature of this game. They've also given up a lot of big plays. The Saints have given up the 8th most completions of 20-plus yards. And they've also given up the 3rd most rushing yards to opposing quarterbacks. And I think that people don't really realize that Kirk Cousins is a very good scrambler. He's 12th in the NFL among quarterbacks in rushing attempts, 12th in rushing yards among quarterbacks. And he's also tied for 4th in rushing touchdowns among quarterbacks. So Kirk Cousins should be fired up confidently. Can't really talk about the pass catcher core because, you know, so much comes down to Jordan Reed and, you know, Vernon Davis is an every week stud. If Jordan Reed is not in there, We're not going to find out about that until later in the week. Maurice Harris played ahead of Terrell Pryor last week. And, Terrell Pryor has been drop worthy for a while now. Unfortunately, had very high hopes for him. That was a big swing and a miss on my part. Jamison Crowder's healthy and seeing a ton of targets. I mean, he actually leads the Redskins in targets since their bye week. So I think he's back to the point where you're starting him every week. And if there is a place to attack in the Saints defense, it would be the slot where Jamison Crowder plays. Kenny Vaccaro, a converted safety, has been the Saints slot corner for most of the year, but he's been missing time with a groin injury. So I think that Jamison Crowder is a really good play this week on the outside. The guys, it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be a tough go. Ken Crawley and Marshawn Lattimore are awesome. Josh Doctson, despite, there's so much hype on this dude. He never does anything in fantasy. I don't expect him to do anything against the Saints. And we can move on to the next. RBs. So Rob Kelly out for the year. Samaje Perine is the popular pickup. The beneficiary is going to be Chris Thompson. Chris Thompson, you go back and look at the games that Rob Kelly has missed. Chris Thompson has two of his highest touch counts in those games. The Redskins coaching staff just does not trust Samaje Perine. And look, I mean, I'm going to try to pick him up in a couple leagues, but he's just a touchdown or bust guy. He doesn't play in the passing game. This is going to be the Chris Thompson show. You look at the two games that Rob Kelly has missed so far this year in their entirety. And Chris Thompson, 188 total yards in a touchdown in one of them, 138 total yards in the other one. The Saints have given up the sixth most receiving yards to running backs this year. And we can move on to the next one.
Okay. The next game is the Kansas City Chiefs and the New York Giants. Final game here for part one. Chiefs coming off the bye. Giants coming off another embarrassing performance. Although they do try to feed the ball, I guess, to Ingram and Shepard.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are things that we can count on. We can hang our hats on, for this Giants offense. Another thing that we can count on is how bad the Chiefs defense is. Chiefs defense is terrible. They are especially terrible on the road. They've given up 27 or more points in seven of their last road games. They've given up top 12 quarterback results in four of their last seven games. Eli Manning, again, I streamed him in a bunch of spots last week, used him in daily fantasy. He was a top 11 fantasy quarterback on the week. I'm going right back to that. Chiefs are 22nd in pass defense DVOA. They've given up the ninth most touchdown passes in the NFL. And, the Chiefs have been just up and down in tight end coverage since losing Eric Berry, and Evan Ingram is just an every week monster. The Chiefs did get slot corner Steven Nelson back a couple of weeks ago. Of course, in their last game, he gave up two touchdowns to Cole Beasley. Love Sterling Shepard. Sterling Shepard is going to has a chance at 10 to 15 targets every single week. Don't underestimate what Sterling Shepard has the potential to bring to the table. He's an auto start against the Chiefs. The Chiefs on the season have actually given up the most fantasy points in the league to wide receivers. And, the best bet to score for the Giants, of course, is Sterling Shepard. Don't really want any part of Tavarius King or Roger Lewis, although, those guys are just every now and again are going to pop up for a touchdown or a big play. It was Tavarius King in week 9, and then last week it was Roger Lewis. So if I had to lean toward one of them, it would be Tavarius King this week, because I think he's going to get fewer routes on Marcus Peters' side of the field. He's going to get more routes against Kenneth Acker and against Steven Nelson in the slot. So if you're real desperate, Tavarius King, I think, is a better option in this particular week than Roger Lewis. Running game, Wayne Gallman actually played the most snaps in the Giants' backfield last week, but Orleans Darkwa, again, saw the most touches. Orleans Darkwa at this point averaging 17 touches per game over his last four. And he has multiple catches in three straight. That's something that I didn't even necessarily know was in his toolbox. He's never been a pass catcher but they've started to use him in the passing game more. That's very good in fantasy and in real life. And then the Chiefs are dead last in the NFL in run defense, DVOA. They've given up 4.6 yards per carry to opposing running backs in their last seven games. Orleans Darkwell, you know, the issue is going to be, will the Chiefs just pace the Giants, which I don't think is out of the question. And then, you know, that could really hurt Orleans Darkwell, although he's been okay, even in games where the Giants did get pasted. Last week, they pretty much got pasted by the 49ers, and then they also got killed by the the week before, the Rams, and Orleans Darkwell still finished with, what, like 18 touches. So that's where we are with the Giants offense. On the Chiefs side, this game really sets up well for the Chiefs. First of all, Giants just get obliterated by tight ends, so that's awesome for Travis Kelce and Alex Smith, of course. And then we have the Tyreek on the road narrative back in play, which just has hit every single time. It's just ridiculous. You know, if you've been on this, like, you're making money in daily fantasy, that's for sure. He's been a top 18 fantasy wide receiver in every single road game, and he has been outside the top 40 in every single home game. I think that this is not necessarily something that is going to keep up, but I think it very well could keep up this week because the Giants give up a ton of big plays in the passing game. They are the least disciplined defense in the league. I thought that they might show up a little bit, you know, in that 49ers game after getting embarrassed the week before. Nope. Not even in the least. I mean, They're a sad, sad, sad football team right now. I mean, Janoris Jenkins, I haven't seen him play well in like 6 weeks. Nobody's tackling. You know, Tyreek should light him up. Alex Smith should too. You know, love this spot for the Chiefs offense. Kareem Hunt he's gone six straight games without a touchdown. I think he gets back on track here. The Giants just got creamed by Carlos Hyde and Matt Breida last week, 5.9 yards per carry. Breida was breaking huge plays. Carlos Hyde had some big plays as well. Just a bad, bad defense. Very, very sad considering all the good players that they have, really. I mean, they even had Janoris and Olivier Vernon back last week. Still couldn't get it done against a 49ers offense that has been terrible all season. Not terrible, but had been pretty bad with C.J. Beathard at quarterback. C.J. Beathard was the number four overall fantasy quarterback last week. So Kareem Hunt, Giants are 27th in run defense, DVOA. You know, Kareem Hunt, in that game against the Cowboys where the Chiefs lost to the Cowboys, Charcandrick West played a bunch more than usual. And I think that is a little bit concerning, but I think that they simply trust him more in pass protection than Kareem Hunt. I think that they were genuinely worried about that Cowboys pass rush, which has been very good. I mean, right now the Cowboys are fourth in the NFL in sacks. But in the two games previous to that, Kareem Hunt had 22 and 25 touches. So I really think that was just probably a one-game blip. And I think that Kareem Hunt gets back on the track here.
So this is pretty cool. Just found out about this, Evan. I don't know if you've heard about TradeStation. It's pretty awesome. TradeStation gives you that extra edge to find your next great trade. They have easy-to-use tools for traders of all skill levels. Simple pricing. Stocks at $5 a trade. Options at 50 cents per contract plus $5 per trade. Futures $1.50 per contract per side. Think about that. If you're a trader, you know the thrill of finding an amazing trade. You can do the exact same thing if you want with TradeStation for less expensive, and you are able to get free premium tools, free real-time market data. Take a look at TradeStation at tradestation.com/fantasy. Very, very cool. Take a fresh look at tradestation.com/fantasy.
Fantasy. Trade smart, trade confident, trade station. That'll do it, by the way. Speaking of trading, that'll do it. Now that you have some information from Evan, you can make your fantasy trades as well. Great stuff, Evan, as always. Already looking forward to getting ready to record part two. That's part two, Bri, with you next. Appreciate those of you that give us the iTunes rankings, comments. Those are always awesome. By the way, if you want a free Madden code, all you have to do this week is sign up for Gamefly, which I'll tell you more about on part two. But if you sign up for Gamefly, gamefly.com/TuckerFootball, a free trial. It's just a free trial. Or gamefly.com/feast. You are in a very, very, very good spot to get something free, a free Madden. Oh, I'm sorry. It's gamefly.com/Eaton. Anyway, I'll tell you about that tomorrow on part two. I'm stuffed. We're done now for today.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.